Happy Valentine's Day from the Fangamer Podcast. What was that, Ben?
Mouth fart.
I'm your host, Jeff. This is episode 149. Today we're going to be talking about dating simulation games. These are often visual novel games, and the goal is usually to obtain a relationship or do the proverbial get down dance with one of the characters. These games are very popular, and we want to understand the appeal of them. We got two segments on this show, one by Matt Hawkins. He's going to be talking about his experience creating a dating simulation game. And up first, we have our own Ben. Ben, say hello.
What's up?
We have Ben, who's going to be exploring the appeal of dating sim games. And you did an interview with Pedro from Slime Girls, correct?
I did it.
Why don't you take us into that, Ben?
It's a warm summer evening. You return home after a long day of school, trudging your way hopelessly yet through another one of your moronic teacher's lectures about how the youth of today is misguided and going straight to hell. You unwind with some TV with your little sister, check on your garden, make lunch for tomorrow afternoon, all that stuff. Tomorrow you're planning on meeting your friends at the food court at the mall to talk about your next big adventure. But before any of that, what's most important is that you need to get out of your house without your dad noticing. Because she's going to be there waiting for you soon in the shopping district. That is, your girlfriend, who you've gotten to know and love purely and honestly. Through countless trials and tribulations. Dangerous trials. You almost died once. From that time, you both went into the TV. The shadows almost got you, and you helped each other through it, and saved someone from being yet again mysteriously murdered. And you don't want to keep your girl waiting, do you? That is, your girl in a video game. Of course I'm talking about a video game. One with dating simulation mechanics. The dating simulation. Oof. Well, what is there to say? Games designed around the concept of meeting, falling in love with, and oftentimes having sex with fictional characters. And there's no way you're thinking that you're gonna sit here and listen to me defend this as a type of game that deserves respect and is worth investing your time into, is there? Well, strap on in, everyone, because dating sims and their bar mechanics can actually be a great and fantastic way to get a player emotionally invested in an experience that no other type of games are really even trying to touch. Certainly, the idea of games existing around the concept of dating fake people is pretty uncomfortable at a glance. And there are tons of actual games in this genre that do not help this perception. You got your weird Japanese DS girl rubby games, games with titles like Do You Like Horny Bunnies? Essentially anything on the old Newgrounds.com dating sim section that you frequented regularly as a dopey 12-year-old. You guys did that too, right? Anyway, these are games that exist purely for erotic enjoyment. And that's not even entirely bad, but they're nothing more than straight-up pornography. You play the game, you meet a girl, you get down eventually after some routine clicking. They don't even pretend to be about anything else. I don't think anyone's going to Do You Like Horny Bunnies for a deep and immersive storytelling experience. But to most people, games like these and games like Love Plus or Katawa Shoujo go hand in hand. They're games about romance, they play similarly at times, and sure, the latter even has sexual content in it. So there's no difference, right? Well, I mean, no. You could see it that way, but no, man. Tons of games you've played have dating simulation mechanics in them already. Some with sexual content involved, no less. Dragon Age 2, Fable 2, The Sims, Grand Theft Auto 4. Games like Harvest Moon, where you're sometimes required to marry someone in the game, they're easy to forget when it comes to in-game romance because of how minimal a role those mechanics play. None of the characters you romance in games such as those are really fleshed out or have much of a story to tell themselves. However, in games like Katawa Shoujo or Persona 4, the characters you're able to become involved with have extensive backstories, an arc in the story, things to say and share with the player. Oh, and hey, remember Mass Effect? Isn't Garrus just, like, a little sweetie? Tali too. And man, weren't you, like, super distraught when Liara, like, lost, like, her original, like, sort of naivete for, like, her vengeance over the Shadow Broker? Man. If a writer can create a character that you yourself finding yourself having an emotional attachment to, is that not an indication of good writing? People become attached to characters all the time as onlookers in TV or games, citing frequently that they are moved to tears or feel otherwise emotional at their deaths, failures, or even grand triumphs. But when the player is you, like, actual you, and your character is becoming involved romantically with a fictional character, it enters this realm of uncomfortability for some. But why is that? We talked to Pedro Silva of the chiptune punk band Slime Girls, and ask him about one of his favorite visual novel games, Katawa Shoujo, and his views on dating simulation games. Katawa Shoujo is a visual novel dating sim game developed by Four Leaf Studios, where you're put in the role of Hisao Nakai, a Japanese boy whose life is suddenly afflicted by cardiac dysrhythmia, resulting in him to transfer to a high school specifically for those with disability, so he can be kept on close watch. Hisao's classmates include those with amputated and prosthetic limbs, burn victims, the blind, deaf, and mute, all with specific class groups tailored to their disability to help them learn better. It's a fantastical and borderline offensive as hell premise. But in spite of this, the game delivers on being a well-polished experience, respectful of its subject matter, with widely praised presentation and writing. And hey, you get to date some cuties in it. So, hello, Pedro.
Yo, what's up?
I want to know, Katawa Shoujo, like, when did you play that game and how much did you play it?
I want to say that game came out 2011. And I initially started it, it was when it came out, like when it finally like got released. I didn't do all the routes that the game offers, but I did four.
What does the gameplay essentially boil down to in Katawa Shoujo?
If anyone's ever read a Choose Your Own Adventure book, that's it. It's just lots of text you go through. That's pretty much all the gameplay boils down to. And then yeah, there's the part where you say a character might do something, and then your player character is given the opportunity to react to it. And the game will provide you with, say, 2 to 4 different options. And depending on what you choose, you could either get, say, there's true ending, and there's good ending, and there's tons of bad endings. When you start the game, it starts on his first day at this school, and during that first day, you meet the main 5 or 6 characters that you will end up being able to choose who to date. Not date, but, you know, pursue and get to know more. And, like, yeah, depending on your actions, like, who you showed the most interest in, the game will kind of choose one for you. And that's how you start a route. See, I kind of even hate using the word pursuing. As far as talking about
yeah,
this game,
it seems pretty, like, I don't know, like predatory.
Yeah, it almost does. And that's how every other dating sim feels. Like, you know, a majority of them. Like, it's.
And you would say Katawa Shoujo feels different.
I would say it does feel different. The way I think it differentiates itself is that the game feels very earnest. It doesn't feel exploitative. It feels like they're just trying to tell a story in that sort of medium of a dating sim visual novel. I think really the game just boils down to just being a very not heavy-handed, just really light, simple story it's telling with the characters. And I think the fact that the characters are disabled, it's certainly a big aspect to the story, but it's not in a fetishistic way.
Does it ever play that for a joke?
Disabilities?
Yeah.
For sure, but not in a weird way. Like, some of the characters will make fun of themselves. I didn't ever feel offended by any of it, or that I thought anything was really in bad taste. I mean, I've played other dating sims before. This game is not it's not fixated on, like, eroticism or anything like that. Like,
right.
The scenes that include that, for all the routes I did, they happen, like, pretty much at the end of the route. Similar to how, like, you know, they'd be a sex scene portrayed in, like, a movie or something. It makes sense within the realm of the story.
Would you then consider this game to be in, like, a different league than other dating sim games?
In that it's good? As opposed to being bad? Maybe, yeah. It's not like I would call it a different kind of game. It's definitely a dating sim. I don't think there's anything personally wrong with someone making a game where it's just like, you know, big-titted chicks are everywhere. Just like, you date everyone. I'm, like, whatever. Like, it is what it is, and a lot of people want that, and I don't see anything wrong with that. However, can you do something good in that medium? For sure. And I think Katawa Shoujo is a great example of that.
Right.
And even I think there's some dating sims that aren't even, like, super dirty, but they're still fun. It's just fun doing it. And I can't quite place why. Like, why in Persona, why is it fun to do social links? Even Mass Effect is a really good example. Like, what my favorite part of Mass Effect is I want to hear every little variation and bit of dialogue between your party members. That's the most exciting part of the game for me. I think that goes for a lot of other people, too. It's like, what is it about these fictional characters that you want to get involved with and you want to know about them? And I think in a book or, like, a movie or an anime, whatever, like, for me, characters are, like, one of the most absolutely important things.
Right.
But in the realm of video games, it's a more hands-on approach to getting to know characters. You know, a writer writing a character, that still applies to a video game, of course. It's just fun doing, like, being the player character, and that's your window into another character. I think it's easy for people to latch on to characters sometimes in order to fill some sort of void in their own life. And maybe dating sims kind of do that for some people. I think it's kind of easy to place love or energy to love something. I think people need to do that oftentimes. Like, maybe people will love playing guitar, or they have some hobby that they put some sort of love into. And for some people, maybe they just need to have that form of love for like another person in real life, but they don't have someone to project that onto. And I think it's easy for people to do that to fictional characters. And if it's a dating sim, I think it's, you know, it's kind of tailored to that. Like, Love Plus is a kind of infamous example.
And I feel like that could create like a very unhealthy expectation for what like an actual interaction with a human being would be.
Not any more than playing a violent video game does. You know, people are always going to make that, you know, argument and talk about that issue. I don't think it's much different than this. Like, do you lose your grasp on reality if you play too much Zelda? 99% of people probably don't, you know? Maybe it's just because we hear stories about people playing like Love Plus or dating sims, and like instantly you conjure in your mind a picture of, you know, some slightly unsightly looking guy with a body pillow with, you know, like anime character on it.
Is that always the case?
No, of course not, and that's unfair. That colors everything they hear about like games from Japan, and like that's their opinion on everything. Like with Katawa Shoujo, for example, because it's so reminiscent of that. I mean, it's not a Japanese game, but people will instantly think that when they see that game, for example. I don't think that it is inherently irresponsible or like detrimental to your social abilities and like your grasp on reality and like what's realistic in life. I don't think it inherently is bad. However, can people easily take it to be bad? Sure. But like I said, just in the same way that someone watching like wrestling on TV can put their sister in a headlock and then kill her, like, it's everybody needs to be responsible for what they intake, and I think most people, responsible adults, can differentiate, and they, you know, it's not an issue. I think there's a strong majority of people, for them, a 2D character, a drawn character, like a drawn picture of a woman or a man, mm-hmm. like they're completely disconnected from it, and they don't see that those images, those 2D images of characters, actually mean something in people's minds, like. And I think for most people that did play video games, that's not the case. Again, a very popular example, like when Aerith dies in Final Fantasy VII, that causes an emotion in you. She's not a real character. But how is that any different from someone falling in love with a character? You know? I think it's easy for me to see what a character represents to someone. Oftentimes they can be very fleshed out, and like it's, and oftentimes they're made to cater to people's ideals and, you know, what they look for in someone else in real life.
That just enters that realm of sort of uncomfortability where it's like, well, this person isn't real, and like you're feeling these emotions for them, but they'll never return it.
To some people, yeah, they need that to be real and returned to them. Mm-hmm. But for some other people, I think they just need to expend their own love onto something else. And even if that character is like means something a lot to them, I think most of them know they're not really real. Like, they don't have any sort of psychological issues. It's not like an imaginary friend type deal, you know? I don't think it's wrong, and I think it's sometimes it can be helpful, because I feel like some people, they can go about their lives just fine not having a significant other or something like that. But some people, I think, just having that void in their life, it distracts them from getting things done, and it's always there for them, and it like, the people that are not as productive as they might be if they had someone else to love, if they, you know, expend that energy, that pent-up desire to love something, giving that energy to something else, someone, if they don't have a hobby, if they don't have art that they put love into, if they put that into a character, then it, you know, it's it, in some ways a kind of healthy way to expend that energy and get rid of it and put it somewhere. I don't see the problem with it, you know, like, some people love drinking. Maybe that's bad. Some people love weed. Maybe that's bad. Maybe, you know, it. Whatever. It's what they want to put their love into because they see something in it. I think it's easy for them to come across as creepy. Like, if you went to Subway and there's just a dude. Again, there's just some dude with his, like, you know, his body pillow. Like, yeah, maybe that might be a little weird. I mean, personally, I think it's pretty awesome. I think it can be understandable and fine, but still be weird. Even if they think it's weird, they still need to realize it's kind of okay, you know? Like, they need to be understanding. Like, there's a difference between personal opinions and whether or not something is right.
How do you feel that people should view the visual novel game? Like, or do people like have like a fundamental misunderstanding on what it's all about?
I don't know if people are necessarily misunderstanding it, because the large portion of them are just purely for eroticism's sake. But mm-hmm. I mean, what you bring up is just a sort of, that's a whole different social issue altogether. Like, why do people have such a problem with sex and like that sort of thing? You know, like for me, it's like, okay, well, it's necessary and people like it. So play a dating sim. If that's what floats your boat, do it. And unfortunately, as a product of most of the games in the genre and medium being, you know, purely for eroticism, and that does make it harder for games that aren't focused on that to thrive and do better.
And you feel Katawa Shoujo fits into that category more than the former?
Yes, Katawa Shoujo is a step in a different direction. And like I mentioned earlier, it's not necessarily like a morally better direction or like a right direction, but it is an example of a game in that medium that is different and does something very well.
Thanks for talking with us, Pedro.
Yep, no problem.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Now, for the past half of a year, I myself have been deep in a series of games full of dating simulation mechanics. Persona 3 and 4 are games developed by Atlus and are some of the most immersive and emotionally investing RPGs I've ever played. The game mechanically centers around social links, which increase as you hang out with others in the game. The rank of your social links correspond to how powerful your abilities can be in battle, so there's a great incentive to meeting as many people as you can and becoming friends with them, oftentimes becoming very attached to them yourself through their personalities and backstory as you climb their ranks. It's not outright about dating, and neither are most good games that fall into the dating sim genre. But oftentimes, if you're high enough on a social link in Persona of someone of the opposite gender, you'll be able to become a couple. Oftentimes as well, you can agree to date multiple people, and that is horrible, and you're horrible, and don't do that. Persona 4, particularly, has shown me that it's okay to grow attached to fictional characters in an interactive medium. My time in that game has made me feel so refreshed, has left me with some wonderful feelings, and I know once it's over, I feel like I've left some actual friends behind that I've come to know, and have been through some actual things with, and I'll be sad. But I know they're fictional. I don't allow myself to think that this is a real world, that I can go hang out with Kanji Tatsumi and make plush dolls. I don't think that Yukiko Amagi is my actual factual girlfriend. I just allow the game to take me on this emotional ride that it wants to, and it's wonderful. Few games have made me feel this level of happy, Animal Crossing being the only one I can really cite from memory. And I think it lies in the simulation of those games, the immersion of allowing yourself to become a part of the experience personally. I love that feeling, and I thank these games dearly for providing me with them. It's easy to see someone who doesn't have a sense of reality getting lost in a simulation game as a sign that these games are weird and creepy, but it's also easy for someone on the outside to see violent acts from unstable people as a sign that violent games are dangerous and harmful. Simulation games, like all games, when played responsibly, are just games, source of entertainment designed for you to have fun in an interactive way. And that's all dating sims are too. There are bad examples, but there are also bad examples of any other kind of game you can think of. I, for one, am open-minded about it, and I welcome the experiences these games bring to me. Entering in with a sense of perspective, knowing what's real and what isn't. Dating sim games, when done right, are harmless works that I think can involve a player emotionally in ways that nothing else can. Media success is frequently measured by how much you feel the actions on the screen, how scared you are, how sad you are, how invested you are. With those venues of emotional connection, you must always realize the difference between reality and fiction. And appealing to our sense of affection is just another venue. It reaches parts of us as entertainment where other works fear to tread. And as someone who's been greatly affected by these connections, I feel that that's something really to be respected.
Ben, you did a really good job on that segment.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it.
And it also brought up a lot of interesting points that kind of really brings up your whole opinion of it in the first place. So I don't even know why you're here, Ben.
Yeah, right? Like, I pretty much covered everything I have to say.
Well, maybe, though, the discussion will bring up some other things.
And
we'll see.
I think so.
All of the things you said made me want to play dating sims, which I've never done before.
Oh, dang.
Well, yeah. Again, didn't you make a dating sim?
You
said you made a visual novel, right?
Yeah, about the hurricane, but there was no dating in that.
Oh, okay, it was just a visual novel.
Yeah, gotcha. There's a difference.
I guess the hurricane dated the land for a little while. Didn't work out so well.
Yeah.
Ben, it's good to have you back. You've been absent for the past few episodes. This is your first episode of the year.
It is, actually.
And you're coming back hardcore.
Coming back so supreme.
Okay, we heard from Ben on Dating Sims. For you guys, Heidi and Charlie, what is the appeal of Dating Sims to you guys as people who have never played them?
I don't know. I can't say I've never played them, and I guess it really depends on what you're calling a dating sim, because there seems to be, like, sort of light dating sims, which are just any game that has, like, a sort of dating mechanic in them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's the more heavy dating simulation, which is where I would say it's either... And they're often visual novels, but they don't have to be. It's anyone that where the dating is either very involved or, like, the primary focus of the game.
And we're kind of focusing on both dating sims, like games that where the objective is to obtain a relationship, but also games that just have a dating sim mechanic. And Ben, you talked about that in your segment also.
I did. I talked a lot about Persona 4, which forever deep into.
I'm going to have to play it.
Do it.
So what other games are out there that have these dating sim mechanics? Ben, you referenced Harvest Moon, and we were talking about that earlier.
I would say that probably the lightest aspect I've ever seen of it is like Final Fantasy VII, where you go on a date, and it's all led up to and sort of seemingly unrelated decisions that you make throughout the game beforehand, from just... generally taking on your impressions of the two main girls who it seems to be applying to just who you have in your party most of the time.
Excuse me, what do you mean two main girls? You're forgetting Barrett.
I said there's the two main girls who, like, 99% of the people who play the game are going to end up with, but you can also date Yuffie and Barrett.
And Barrett.
Yes.
Let's get this straight here.
But both of them are fairly difficult to accomplish, just because it seems to be as a result of unnatural decision making throughout the game in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. I find that, like, really cool though, and, like, a little less, like, disingenuous than most other dating sims I play, because, like, that is a result of, like, your actions in the game that, like, you weren't doing that with the knowledge that you were going to be dating those characters later. And I sort of wish more games did that, instead of, like, dating sims being, like, all about that. But I don't know. It always seems, like, way more deliberate in other games. I think Final Fantasy VII does that pretty well for its time, especially.
So you're saying that you'd wish that games would kind of surprise you with that you're able to date somebody, as opposed to being all about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of feels more natural in that way. And, like, makes... like, Pedro talked about it a little bit in his segment, how, like, it feels sort of predatory in most dating sims. And, I don't know, in that situation, it kind of doesn't. It's just, like, a result of things that have happened, and that seems a little more realistic to me.
Another game that did something similar was Radiata Stories, in which there isn't even, like, outright decision-making that you're doing. It's simply that near the end of the game, the girl who spent the most time in your party, and there's, like, a lot of characters that can potentially join your party, like, I think over 100... But it's whatever one has spent the most time in your party, which would seem to imply that you like them a lot. But in most cases, it's actually just that, all right, this was actually a good fighter, as opposed to most of the regular town folks, like the girl who's works at the reception at the clinic. You know, you can have her join your party, but she sucks. So why would you?
Because you should always make your decisions in RPGs based on who's cute.
There you go. And that's... and in the end, you get a short little date thing. It's not, there's no talking. It's just you and the girl who might be dressed a little bit different, and y'all just watch fireworks, and then the game continues.
Oh, well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's actually pretty nice. And you don't even have to accept the date either. It's not an important part. You get a letter, and you can decide to meet them at this one place. And if you don't, then the game continues regardless.
Just be like, I respect you as a fighter. Nothing more.
Another game that implements kind of a surprise dating sim mechanic is Mass Effect, because that's definitely not a game about finding your true love.
No,
it's kind of a happenstance thing. It's a it's a big part in it.
I feel like that part of that game has so much publicity that it's basically like a sub part of the game.
Right. I was about to say, like, because the big uproar was made at the very beginning that, oh my gosh, there's a sex scene in this game. Well, big whoop, there's a sex scene in like every BioWare game.
My girlfriend is Liara, and I am never going to stray from her.
I have
even when she went like bad.
Yeah, in the second game when became time to pick the girl, I picked Liara, but she wasn't there. So Shepard just sadly stared at a picture of her.
Oh man,
that was it. No sex scene. Wow. I was pretty upset about that.
Yeah. So, sorry. Go ahead.
No, keep going. No, go for it.
So, would you guys say that game mechanics that? Okay, sorry. Would you guys say that in Mass Effect the dating sim aspect feels tacked on? And if so, how could that be improved?
It does kind of feel like fan service in that it was put there so they could put that part in there, but I still like it. It doesn't matter.
I think that to a large degree, the dating part is actually just an extension of the existing get to know your crew members, because it happens naturally or somewhat naturally. If there's a romantic option with that person, it's just going to come about after talking with them, just like you talk to all the other crew members who don't have a romance option. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of building up trust and getting to know them all, which makes it probably one of the more natural ways you could have that.
For me, like, it doesn't feel awkward or out of place or anything, but it does feel very, like, Hollywood. In that, like, I'm like, okay, you put this in there because people will like it. All right, fine. It makes sense enough. Like,
yeah.
It could be just as fine without it. It didn't need that, but it is what it is. People like it.
What other games are out there that have dating sim mini games in them that really enhance the gameplay for you guys?
Star Ocean 1 and 2 come to mind, I would say, because it's similar to Mass Effect in that every once in a while you can go to a town and then everybody in the party just goes off on their own adventure and you can find them in the town and you can talk to them, and it's mostly just a get to know your character, your party members, that sort of thing. But and so it's not really a mini game. But depending on what you do during that, you can like your main character can end up with one of the other characters, or you can make the various other characters fall in love with each other just by manipulating them, or you can just not do it. This is an interesting way of just in general getting to know your characters, and then therefore, I don't know, being more invested in the story.
Ben, have you played these dating sim games where it's all about the dating? Because none of us have.
Well, like, it's probably the closest thing I've ever played was Thousand Arms, which I did give you a taste of.
You're talking about the closest thing to a dating sim that is
right.
Dating?
Okay. In which it's not necessarily the focus of the game entirely, I guess, maybe, because it is a full-blown RPG.
I think you could argue that it is the theme of the game.
Yeah, it is definitely the theme, and it is very involved compared to the dating sim aspects of most other games.
Okay, so Thousand Arms. Oh my god.
Because we didn't actually take the time to play many dating sim games for this podcast because we are busy and we didn't end up having time, and it seemed like a lot of other people had a lot of interesting things to say about it. But I did break out Thousand Arms and we did play through a little bit of it and went on a couple of dates with Sodina.
Yes, Sodina. Ooh, oh, Sodina.
That's Sodina?
Yeah, so I think the biggest realization I had with Thousand Arms was that dating sim mechanics are very frustrating. Or at least in Thousand Arms, right? Like, in this game, it would give me two options on how to respond to a statement that your date would make.
Yeah, the whole dating sim part would basically be a Q&A session where your date would make a comment or ask you a question, and then you have to answers to respond.
And oftentimes they would be your answers would be the exact same, have the exact same meaning, but they would be phrased differently,
which I should point out is very interesting, because it's not like in Mass Effect where you have good answer, medium answer, bad answer. These are very hard to tell what the answer is, which one's the good one.
So oftentimes she would ask these questions and there would be seemingly no positive way to respond to it. And of course, we're just playing this to see what the mechanics are like, and so we're just laughing. And at some point, she gets upset with you for changing the conversation very abruptly, and then she'll start doing the exact same thing. so you'll respond to something, and then she'll suddenly say, "I sleep with stuffed animals. Does that seem weird?" And then you have two options. One is, "Yes, that's very weird," something along those lines. The other one was, "I like making secret gases in bed."
and we chose the secret gases option, and she loved it. She was okay. All about the secret gases thing.
Oh my god, that's the weird farting game! I know about this game!
Oh dear. I didn't know it was a reference to anything, yeah, anything like, grander.
Don't they talk about, like, dropping a mad air biscuit at some point? That's a line in that game, I'm pretty sure.
I think so, yes. That does sound familiar.
Oh my god. It all comes full circle, everyone.
It was a very strange experience, but very educational at the same time.
The thing to note about Thousand Arms, though, is that it may be a bit different than most dating sims, and that you're pretty much encouraged to date all of the available girls because it's important to the mechanics, mm-hmm. So where you can forge better weapons. But
that's
also
basically Persona 3.
It's also just generally self-aware for comic effect. It knows that it's a ridiculous dating sim for the purpose of being a ridiculous dating sim, like as in order to be comedic. So I think it's kind of tongue-in-cheek making fun of the dating sim genre. So it's not necessarily a good example of the dating sim genre.
After a little while, I got the impression that it had this level of self-awareness that I guess made it tolerable. But yeah, pretty much everything in that game is, hey, look at that girl over there. I better go talk to her or be mean to her or something.
I know that a lot of our listeners asked us to bring up and discuss Hatoful Boyfriend, I think, as maybe.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I don't think we're really going to get into it because I don't think any of us have really played it.
We did try. I tried to get the English translator on this podcast, but she politely declined.
Yeah. Really?
But this game is the game where you date pigeons.
Yeah, yeah.
And Laura has played a little bit, but probably not too in-depth, so I didn't feel like she needed to be dragged in for this discussion.
But it's also politely declined right. to appear on our podcast.
but I believe it's like a real dating sim, but with pigeons. Like,
I wouldn't say all that. That story takes some pretty bizarre turns.
Does it? I mean, granted, like this is, again, from my impression based on her limited exposure to this.
Mm.
So,
if you keep going in that game, it turns out, like, there's some, like, mad scientist plot that, like, one of the pigeons is, like, a psycho and wants to kill you and use you for his experiments. I think the joke is that it plays it straight, but at a certain point, I think it completely, like, goes against that.
Right.
So,
but anyway, it's not, again, I don't think it qualifies much for the discussion about dating sims because it is, again, sort of another parody.
Yeah.
Would you guys rather play a parody dating sim or a real dating sim?
Real.
I would say that in order to fully appreciate a parody, you have to experience the real thing. So
I'm down with real. I'm down to get that Love Plus going.
If only we could get a translation. Come on, Konami.
That's never gonna happen.
I've already picked my favorite girl in that game.
Oh, have you played Love Plus?
No, but I've looked at the girls a lot because...
Oh.
a bunch of figures came out when I was running GameSwag, and I was like, oh, that one's pretty. I think I like that one the most.
You just made a mental note that you're going to marry that
yes,
one.
Yes, if I ever play Love Plus, I'm going to go for that one. I don't know.
I feel like every time I think of Love Plus, and this is a horrible comparison, but I think of like Nintendogs.
Same thing. Exactly.
And like that's
the worst.
The
petting
like,
action. It's just yeah, ridiculous. It's,
yeah, so many petting, you throw in so many bones.
But I mean, granted, I don't think any of our listeners who like some of them are seem really into these dating sims, and none of them brought up Love Plus because I'm beginning to think that it is, in fact, just kind of creepy.
That's the thing, though. Like, I wouldn't say so, because I know some people who you would never really expect to be into dating sims who are super into Love Plus, and I don't think it's because it's, like, I don't know, super creepy or anything. As Pedro was saying in my segment earlier, like, it's easy to see the stories that come out of people who play Love Plus and take it super far. Mm-hmm. Like, I even know a person in real life who, like, has a Love Plus girlfriend and, like, treats her as, like, an actual factual girlfriend and all that. But I think at the end of the day, like, you can still have appreciation for this game where, like, you can do cute things with cute girls. And, like, for some people, it's super fun. Like, I really wanted to have an interview with my friend Mana. She's an artist in Japan, and she was super into that game for a long time. And it would have been really interesting to hear, like, what brought her to that. But I've seen that around a lot, and I don't think the game itself...
As Pedro kind of said in your segment, Ben, I think with a lot of these games, regardless if they're parody or if they're real, like Love Plus in this case, where it seems like they could be kind of creepy, it really just depends on the player themselves and how they're approaching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Thanks, everyone, for posting in the forum thread. Keep it up. It seriously does, like, influence, like, our conversation, like, what we do look up from your suggestions. So thanks a lot.
Do you guys want to hear some voicemails?
Hey, Fangamer Podcast. It's me, Kevin Chai. I have never been in a relationship in real life. Shocking, I know. But I have played the game Sono Hanabira ni Kuchizu Te o. It's a visual novel, and it's told in the first person, so I feel like I really got to feel Nanami's feelings for her girlfriend, Yuna. It's fully voice acted, so I got to hear myself as Nanami talking to Yuna. And the art is just beautiful. So I got to see all of the wonderful things Yuna did to my body in gorgeous detail. That's it for now. See you later.
Oh, Kevin Chai, thank you.
We've missed you, Kevin Chai. You know, I had a realization the other night, and I was thinking about how would I approach a dating sim game? Like, if I was to try to really write something to try to move people emotionally. And dating sims present a really interesting opportunity to tell a good story. And you kind of talked about this already, Ben. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a fantastic opportunity to really say something about love, relationships, and communication. And the other thing is that relationships tend to be, at times, hilariously awkward. Mm-hmm. And you can really have a lot of fun with that in writing. So,
yeah.
I think, like
I said, too, like, it's just, like, a venue that games, like, are sort of afraid to touch just because, like, humanity, society as a whole is, like, they're just so self-conscious about sex in general. So to have these things, like, specifically just about relationships and stuff like that, like, I think if done well, it's just super beneficial.
Charlie and I watched Monty Python's Meaning of Life the other night.
Yeah.
And there's a certain point in that when they basically just say what life is about, but really it's about sex.
Well, they never actually say it's about sex, or at least I don't think they ever did. But in every single segment of, you know, part one, birth, part two, you know, learning and education, etc., they always have some subliminal or overt message about sex. And so at the end, even though they tie it up by saying, all right, this is what life is about, this, this, and this, but the entire thing has sort of subliminally said, oh, yes, it's also about sex. But we're not going to say it out loud because everybody's uncomfortable about that.
Anyway, let's go for another voicemail.
Hey, this is Andronian. I just wanted to chime in and say that my current favorite dating sim is Fire Emblem Awakening, because you not only pick a waifu for yourself to date, but you also decide who pairs off with who in your whole army. It's pretty much the best shipping simulator out there. Well, see ya.
All right, thank you, Andronian.
Andronian, word. Man, I really want to play that video game.
I just want to play it because Fire Emblem is just a really cool series.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't absolutely the thing about Fire Emblem also that when something happens, it affects the rest of the story?
Well, you can definitely have your party members die permanently.
That's kind of a cool aspect if you're going to consider a marriage.
Because that's going to be permanent. Congratulations. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Also, if your wife then dies.
Oh, man. Games. It's time to restart that level. Can't have these kind of deaths on you.
Or put on casual mode.
Hello, my name is Frank. Frank, Toby Radiation Fox.
Oh.
My favorite dating sim game is the one that I'm making myself. In my game, you date a megalomaniacal skeleton named Papyrus, who only talks in Papyrus font.
Thank God.
He wears a fedora to your first date and asks you, "How do you like my style?" It doesn't matter which dialogue options you choose, because the standards are so low, nothing can dissuade him from pursuing you. He makes you spaghetti and serves it to you in a cardboard box. It tastes terrible, so you can't eat it. So he eats all of it and gets spaghetti sauce all over his face. Then he kisses you on the cheek with his bony, lipless mouth. Eventually, he starts to open up, and you realize that there's more to him than just some creepy, awful skeleton guy. Just kidding. He gives you a present box for your 2.5-day anniversary, and you open it up. The box is full of spaghetti. You eat all of it. That's my game.
Thank you, Toby.
Tobes.
Oh, Toby.
That was pretty wonderful, and I'm looking forward to playing this game.
Radiation. I hurt you.
Anyway, let's go on.
Hey, this is Evan Butler, also known as Steve Sussy, and I'm just calling in to tell you what my absolute favorite dating sim video game is of all time. And I'll tell you what it is. It's real life. Because in the end, we all play the game, but I'm always just a loser. Have a great day.
A prophet and a poet.
Everybody. All right. Thank you, Evan, for your heartfelt...
I was going to quote an entire song in response to that, but I forgot it, so I'm just going to say a prophet and a poet. Something, something, a walking contradiction.
There we go.
Dear Fangamer Podcast, it's me, Rune Devers, and I want to submit this voicemail to you guys because the genre of visual novels is pretty dear to my heart. They have, perhaps justifiably, gotten a bad rap, so I think I'll say a few words about why I like them. I don't consider myself to be an expert on visual novels, or simulated dating in particular, and I'm notoriously bad at completing them. I want to comment in this voicemail on the genre as a whole, rather than focusing on the romantic aspects. My introduction to this genre came through the works of Key, Canon, Air, and Clannad. They've gotten their own subgenre as nakige, or games that make you cry. As games that actively seek to make you cry, they represented for me a completely new experience in games. For the longest time, the games I've played have been focused on making the experience fun, either through the mechanics themselves or a heroic story of a hero that saves the world. Visual novels, on the other hand, tend to have minimal gameplay, and from a game design perspective, they aren't very interesting to look at under the hood. With few exceptions that are hybrids of visual novels and another genre, they aren't very fun to play, and involve lots of repeatedly tapping the enter key in order to progress the story. I want to highlight an episode that Extra Credits made last year called Beyond Fun. In this video, Portnow and Floyd argue that as a community, we need to go beyond the idea that the only things games can deliver is the idea of fun. Recently, we've seen a handful of games, for instance, Spec Ops The Line, that are notably not fun to play, but deliver, in the words of the Extra Credits guys, an engaging experience. Visual novels are one genre of game that has succeeded in making experiences that may not be fun, but are certainly engaging. They evoke an emotional response through the way the player is immersed in the story. The typical first-person perspective lets the player live out the life of the protagonist and develop a connection with the people around them. A casual browsing of 2012's Katawa Shoujo will reveal how people who are absolutely new to the genre are surprised at the feelings that a video game can induce in the player. These feelings can be anything from the terror of having your family slaughtered around you in Umi Neko no Naku Koroni, to the profound tragedy of Planetarian's robot girl being the most human figure in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. I would even say that these games are able to evoke feelings of love, because few other genres of games have given me such a strong attachment to their characters and make me wish that I could support them through their trials and challenges. I want to close with a few recommendations from the ones that I've played. These would be Narcissus, Planetarian, Clannad, Symphonic Rain, and True Remembrance. Some of these are available as free downloads, while others are available unofficially as fan translations. Thank you for your time, and I hope that this message encourages others to check out this genre.
That, I think that the idea of games not being fun is a pretty, or the games that aren't fun is a pretty big subject that can be tackled at another time, but it is a very good point. Because I would say that simulated dating is not necessarily about fun. That's one of the probably one of the reasons why it's not seen as a important sort of game or somewhat creepy, because it's not just trying to be fun. You're trying to say something that's generally very personal and is not generally associated with games. And if you want to see a lot more of Runedevorous' thoughts on simulated dating games or in visual novels specifically, not necessarily simulated dating games, you can check out the forum topic, which I think we'll have a link to in the notes.
Hey, this is Aaron, or METC on the forums, and I just wanted to say that, in my opinion, I like to think that the Fangamer podcast is a fantastic and favorite dating sim. Yeah, that's it.
Well, Metsy, I'm never going to say your name right because I like the way I say it. You're cool.
Which route did you pick, Aaron? Yeah. I don't know who you got with at the end of the game.
You're going to wind up making three of us feel very lonely.
Yeah.
I mean,
just like real life.
All right, so we're gonna swing back to the METC voicemail after we give some closing thoughts on the subject of dating simulations.
I just like passing secret gases in bed.
I have closing thoughts in that, you know, if they're written well and they're like, girls like romance, and if you can control the romance, that's pretty cool, and I would like to play a dating sim, pretty much is what I want to say. Now, right. Thanks to all this.
I think my expectations for what my segment was going to be and what my opinions on dating sims were going to be are now completely different. Particularly through the research I did and through my discussion with Pedro. And, like, just now the way I guess I think on dating sims is, like, catastrophically different. I would really like to play one. Mostly, like, out of my realization of, like, what those sorts of simulations do for me. And I don't know, like, I think I have a lot to thank for games that can sort of put me in a situation and make me feel a certain way that I wouldn't otherwise be feeling. And I think that's really great, and I would really like to play more dating sim games, I guess, just to see what it's all about. And more games with dating sim elements, like Fire Emblem. I mostly want to play Fire Emblem.
True.
Well, after, at the beginning of starting this podcast, or you know, when we first tossed around the idea, I found that the entire thing, like most aspects of dating sims, to be very awkward and a little bit uncomfortable. And I still find a lot of these dating sim aspects to be awkward and uncomfortable. And I'm really, but at this point, I'm more curious about exactly why they're more awkward and uncomfortable to me than they are for other people. And I can't speak for other people, and I don't want to assume that they're, that there's anything wrong with the way that they think about it or that they get any enjoyment out of it. I can only speak to myself, and I can say that it's not that I can't form an emotional connection with fictional characters, but I do believe that the level of that connection is fairly limited for me. There are characters in books and video games and movies that I respect or admire and try to emulate, and girls that I can imagine getting romantically involved with if they were real. But the limitation of the mediums, the fact that we can't interact with books and movies, and even in games that interactivity is scripted, and you have very limited choices. To me, a real relationship is interactivity and movement and sound and misunderstandings and idiosyncrasies. For me, romance is far too real for me to be comfortable expending it on something that doesn't exist. And maybe that's just about my approach to romance in the first place, and so that's all I can say about it.
Oh, that's tough, though.
Besides the gases in bed thing, I, too, was kind of confused by dating sims going into this, but as we did a little bit more research and we heard more from people, I don't think games, as they're progressing as an art form, I don't think they should be limited to not talk about sex or relationships, much like, you know, anything. That being said, I'd like to see how dating sims could progress if they were not called dating sims, if they were just games.
Right.
Which is why I think that a lot of my favorite things that have... My favorite games often have some sort of dating sim aspect to them. Because they are approaching that that discussion of romance and love and relationships in general.
And one of the common things amongst, I'd like to think, humanity is relationships and sexuality and love and emotion. And I'd like to see games approach that seriously and try to say something with it, because, heck, you have a lot of people playing these games, and it'd be fun to really get something meaningful out of it instead of filling a void or a wish fulfillment type of thing. I think one of the funny thoughts I had about this whole topic the other day when I was talking to you, Charlie, was I said, it'd be interesting to see an MMO dating sim.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there's definitely a lot of fundamental problems and issues I could see coming out of that, but...
Yeah, bro, it's called OkCupid.
Yeah. It may be a bit more real for people. That's the appeal I see there, instead of it being pre-scripted. And if it is going to be pre-scripted, be cool to see something being said with those things instead of, am I childish for sleeping with stuffed animals, you know?
Well.
Y'all should try out Katawa Shoujo, I think. I really want to play that game through as well. I think it's, like, a pretty good example of, like, when it can be done well. Game Club, Katawa Shoujo.
Okay.
Boom.
So we've got a bomb we've got to drop.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
This is perhaps one of the biggest and best things that we've done thus far this entire year. Heidi, would you like to reveal what this is?
Jeez. Well, Fangamer is presenting its very own dating sim. We thought it up at the end of January, and we spent the last 2 weeks writing it, programming it, doing the art for it, and just putting it all together. And it's ready right now.
Oh my God, really?
That's right.
Oh man.
There's a website for it. The game is affectionately called Suite 33, which is in reference to the Fangamer suite, the address being Suite 33. And you can get this game on suite33game.com.
Yep. That's SWEET33GAME.com.
The most obvious spelling for a dating game. But yeah, this is a pretty fun little game. Mado has been working really hard programming this thing. He hasn't slept at all in the last couple weeks.
No, he's starting to levitate like Charlie.
Oh my God.
So in this game, without giving away too much, you can date, or you could propose marriage to everybody in the Fangamer office.
Yep.
Yeah, all your favorite office employees. Steve, Reed.
The twins?
The twins.
Yes!
And even the podcast very own Benjamin.
Oh, no.
Yes, that's right. Ben is in this game, and he didn't even know it.
Oh, no.
So that is our...
We forgot to mention probably the most important person that people can date. And that is, of course, Michael.
Ruby. Oh, Michael!
Michael is the most important person you can date in this game. So this is our Valentine's gift to you guys.
Oh,
now you can date every one of us, possibly even marry us, and each time you propose to somebody, guess what? You get a unique ending.
Yep.
Custom to your
person. How many bad endings are there?
I am not at liberty to discuss that.
That's a surprise.
However, we can reveal that the game is completely free.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not selling this. This is purely for everybody who wants to play it. Right now, it is only going to be playable on PC.
Hopefully, we're going to port it to Mac pretty soon.
Yeah, we're trying to get that figured out as soon as possible.
Because Mado knows how to program in XNA, which is Microsoft only, and we don't own a Mac. That's the only reason. We're not doing that because we hate Macs. We just absolutely can't do it yet. Not enough time.
But hopefully it'll be available soon for everybody to play. This has been a really fun experience making this game, and it was really like our first attempt to make a game together with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it came out pretty good. I think it came out well.
It's probably going to be the best game we ever make. We're never going to be able to top this.
But
maybe cut that part out.
Nope. Nope.
Ben, are you looking forward to this game?
I'm really looking forward to this game. I don't know how I'm going to play it. I'm probably just going to steal Ash's PC here and just go to town on everybody in the Fangamer office, including myself.
Right. Especially you have to know.
Right.
Ben, well, your ending is one of my favorites.
Oh, good. My ending is my favorite, too.
Any more thoughts on this?
Oh, that's it. To say any more might spoil something.
Should we say the art was done by Drew Wise and Melissa King?
And Laura M.W.
Oh, and Laura M.W. Oh, yeah, it so I didn't forget that. And Laura M.W. And I drew some sprites, just a few, not very many. So that's it.
Yeah. So you guys can go check that out on sweet33game.com. And speaking of making dating sim games, Matt Hawkins got a hold of us for this episode and said that he was doing a story for a zine that he's making, and his story involves his experience creating a dating sim.
Which suddenly we have a lot more experience with ourselves.
Some of you may be wondering why we didn't reference this earlier and say we had experience making dating sims. When you play the game, you'll recognize very quickly that is borderline dating sim.
We don't know what we're doing. We're just having fun.
Yeah. But hopefully Matt did know what he was doing. If not, I guess we'll find out.
Hey now, it's Matt Hawkins, your pal from Attract Mode, here to talk about dating simulators. Actually, one in particular. Ever hear of Heartbreakers? Probably not. Unfortunately, it's not readily available, so you'll have to trust me when I say that it was fairly awesome. Though I am a bit biased since it's something I made. Now, before I got into writing my video games, which is how I primarily pay the bills, I actually designed them. Once upon a time, I was lead designer at Ubisoft's short-lived and semi-experimental New York City studio. After it was shut down, myself and a friend who had also recently been laid off and who also knew a few things about art and programming, we got together to take a stab at making games. Specifically the kinds of games we wanted to play and which weren't readily available. Now, it's been over 10 years, so I forget how the ball got rolling, if we reached out or if we heeded the call. I think it was the latter. But some guy wanted us to make a game for his website, which was aimed at kids. And that sounded innocent enough, so we took the NJ Transit train, we were both living in Jersey City at the time, to Rahway, New Jersey. Now, it's a sleepy little town, which is a nice way of saying economically impoverished, with its biggest claim to fame being a prison that rests on the border, which was the perfect place for someone like our client. His name was Bernie, a gentleman in his late 70s, early 80s, who seemed straight out of an episode of The Sopranos. He gave off the air of a mobster, a one-and-a-half-bit mobster, but a mobster nonetheless. The meeting took place in his headquarters, where he operated a real estate agency, car service, laundromats, restaurants, and various other operations that totally reeked of money laundering. All his henchmen were present as well. They were all ex-homeless people, recovering heroin addicts, bikers. Basically, they were essentially his goons, and they did all this dirty work. Though, you know, at the end of the day, they were all really nice to myself and my partner, so I can't really say anything too bad about them. Now, the first meeting was to assess what our client wanted and to let him know what we were capable of. Basically, one of Bernie's pet projects was a website that was aimed at kids, those between the ages of 8 and 12, to get this, to inform them of their constitutional rights. It was designed to empower kids to let them know that they shouldn't accept being treated like second-class citizens, which is a noble idea, and I appreciated the strong anti-establishment vibe, especially for a website aimed at people that age. But the execution was a bit extreme. Case in point, and I'm not making this up, when you visited a page, you were greeted with a flash animation of a school being blown up. Like, one second you'd see an elementary or junior high school, next second, see a big atom bomb cloud. Now, this was supposed to be a call to arms, and it's, you know, it's one of those things which, if more people knew about it at the time, it totally would have been shut down. Anyhow, it was clear early on that Bernie was totally clueless when he came to video games. Now, I wasn't expecting him to know Nintendo's entire catalog or anything like that, but, you know, I had assumed that he at least heard of the name Nintendo before, but no. In fact, he didn't even know who Pac-Man was. Though, I saw a such unfamiliarity as a golden opportunity, because I was able to convince him to okay a dating simulator, which I may not have been able to with anyone else who was a bit more clued in. Now, dating sims was something that I'd been totally obsessed with ever since I learned of their existence. Now, they were basically this category of Japanese game that I wish I could have played on my Sega Saturn. I played tons and tons of imports on it, but I couldn't because of the language barrier. But I knew about them from reading game magazines and various internet articles, at least enough to know what they were about and enough to know that I wanted to see them in America, to the point that I was willing to make one. Again, to clarify, I wanted to make a video game whose genre I was completely unfamiliar with. Not that Bernie noticed, I was able to sell him on the idea by stating that it would appeal to girls, which is a target of gaming that that is totally underserved, especially back then. So that's the thing. It wasn't a guy dating girls like all the other ones that I'd seen, but a girl going on dates with dudes. Once more, I was eager to mix things up for a type of game I had never even played. But you know what? I was convincing enough to get the project okayed. So anyways, this is what I came up with. First, you create a girl from scratch by picking her body type, her skin tone, and all the finer details like hairstyle, shape of the eyes, you know, etc., etc. Then you choose one of six boys to go out with, each conforming to a certain stereotype. You're the jock, the hipster, the nerd, the goth, and I forget what the other two are. Then he chooses a location, and then the date unfolds. Gameplay consisted of this. The boy would say something, and you, as the girl, would have four different responses to choose from. Depending on what you said would lead to another question or statement, and then you would have four more choices to choose from, and so forth. And basically, like, a conversation would be built from this. You got points based upon what you said, and the goal was to say the right things to have the boy be interested in you. Now, the date is timed, and if by the end there's enough points, the night ends with basically the moment of truth, to see if the relationship has any legs. Now, one randomized element was the possibility of the boy acting like a jerk. At times, there'd be options to say certain things to get the conversation, to get the date back on track, or you could just sort of dump them right there on the spot for an instant game over. The idea being that a girl should not take crap from anyone and should be able to, you know, take command of any situation. Now, that all sounds fine on paper, but in execution, there were many issues, which could have been fixed with more time and money and playtesting. But none of those would end up being available, unfortunately. Right from the beginning, we underestimated the amount of resources that was necessary, plus the technology we had at the time wasn't helping matters either. Remember, this is 2002, we're using like Flash 3.0 or something like that, which you really couldn't do a whole lot, especially with the stuff I was trying to come up with. But I tried my best to trudge forward, hoping that a light bulb would turn on and all our problems would be solved or something like that. Now, along the way, I would go to Huawei on a regular basis to deliver the latest build and demonstrate them to Jerry. And these meetings were fairly rough. I remember one time Jerry stating to me, "What's going on here? Where's the danger?" And I asked him, you know, "What do you mean by danger?" And then he concocted these crazy scenarios to make the dates more, quote-unquote, exciting, which led to me explaining to him that the game was aimed at young women, and his ideas, that being from the mind of a dirty old man, were just too risque and flat-out vulgar. Stuff like, in the middle of the date, the boy would all of a sudden try to grab your breasts, or how he would try to convince you to steal some condoms at the drugstore. Now, truth be told, looking back, especially, his ideas were kind of hilarious, even brilliant in some cases, but again, I tried telling him that the internet had a bad reputation amongst parents, as is. Again, remember, this is early 2000s, and the web was even scarier than it is now to parental units. So, you know, we had to play it safe. Making matters worse is how I was going through a really rough patch in my life at the time. My primary income at the point was unemployment. Shortly after getting laid off from Ubisoft, the internet bubble burst, and then 9/11 happened. So getting a job in New York City was pretty much all but impossible. So when unemployment ran out, I couldn't pay the rent, so I got kicked out of my apartment and effectively became homeless, which meant working on the game as I crashed at friends' couches, which was pretty stressful because I was also trying to get a regular job because the game wasn't exactly paying any dividends. I remember the one final push to get the game done just so I can get off my back and concentrate on, like, rebuilding my life. It basically involved writing the majority of the game's dialogue all at once. Due to all the different factors to consider, like the types of boys and the locations and how both of those are tied to each other, plus the number of dates, the length of the dates, the different possible routes and outcomes, all that jazz, I all of a sudden found myself having to write 70,000 unique lines of dialogue, all in the span of a weekend or something crazy like that. Again, at that point, because I had so much on my plate, I didn't really care about the game, especially because Jerry was being so stingy with the money. You know, he literally would just, you know, just give us the amount owed in little tiny increments, and we had to beg for each and every single time. So I decided to cheat. So the last couple hundred or so lines all revolved around hot dogs. Like, the jock at the baseball game would go, "Hey, would you like a hot dog?" Or the goth at the museum would ask, "Gee, do you think they sell hot dogs here?" Etc., etc., etc. I figured, statistically speaking, I'd be safe. Anyways, eventually, it was the moment of truth to finally present the finished game to Jerry and to watch him actually play the game. And we didn't know, every single question in all the dates he went on had a hot dog statement. "Wow, why the hell is everyone talking about hot dogs?" he would growl. I forget what excuse I came up with, but it was good enough. He accepted the game. But my job wasn't done. He still owed us some money. And to get the final amount, I had to go back to Rahway, which is not a fun or a cheap trip, by the way, to address some concerns he had. Apparently, the game had not been well received, and I went to investigate. So Jerry's idea of advertising the game is as follows. He basically created flyers for it, which sounds fine, right? But he gave it to his ultra-creepy ex-homeless slash recovering from heroin slash... They sort of look like child molesters. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if a few of them were registered sex offenders. Looking employees to basically stand outside in front of schools all day long waiting for the bell, the final bell to ring and kids to pour out. And as they're leaving, they would just try to, like, accost them and shove this piece of paper down their throat, which freaked them out and pissed off the parents. And I think the cops were called. So either no one knew about the game, or when they did, because of the associated hoopla, no one wanted anything to do with it. So it didn't get played at all, and all of a sudden it was our fault, and we weren't going to get paid the rest of the amount of the money. But I forget what I did, but eventually I did get the remaining sum, which was, you know, hardly anything. But, you know, it was just a matter of principle. Now, as for the game itself, I was never able to fix any of the problems. There were some serious balance issues and logic flaws that I was not able to properly reconcile. But, you know, at the very least, and this is all my partners, you know, doing, the create a character feature was simply awesome. Like, everyone I showed it to fell in love with that part of the game. And I think games now have this, but back then it was honestly, no one had really created a game in which you could just create a girl from scratch and have all these different types of body types. Like, you know, you could have someone who just looked realistic. She didn't have to have an hourglass figure, but they still looked cute and totally relatable, and, you know, again, different types of skin types and ethnicities. Also, I think the vaguely pornish sounding soundtrack also helped everyone falling in love with the game to a certain point. It was from some royalty-free CD that my partner and I dug up. You know what? In the end, I don't think I did such a bad job making a game based upon a genre that I only knew about from afar and had never played, and which involved diving deep into the mind of a 14-year-old girl, her wants and her needs, which I clearly was clueless about. But I'm assuming that everyone loves a good hot dog, right? And that's the story of Heartbreakers.
Podcast crew, Phase on Chaos here. Some thoughts on sandbox games. I was thinking about it for a bit, and I'm personally not generally a big fan of sandbox games, but I do love Animal Crossing. So I was trying to figure out why it is that while I have no interest in games like Skyrim or GTA or anything like that, and I also don't really have much of interest in games like SimCity or like or The Sims or just any generally more simulation games like that, and I'm trying to figure out what exactly it is that draws me so much to Animal Crossing. What separates it from these other games that makes it okay for me to spend so much time in this game that has no direct narrative? What is it about it that makes it just work for me and so many other people? And I think what it is that it fits in an interesting spot in between the other types of games that I mentioned, in that it's far enough removed from what we're used to as a general game, that like the general just forward moving narrative of a game where you start at the beginning, you keep going, you go until you beat the final boss, and then there are the end credits. Instead, you watch credits when you go to a concert that a dog's playing guitar and singing at. And it's just so far removed from what we're used to that we can accept that it's something different compared to something like Skyrim and GTA, where generally what you're doing, it's still sort of similar to regular video games. Like, you're still going around either attacking monsters and dragons or going driving cars, shooting people. That's stuff you can do in regular games that have a forward-moving narrative. Whereas on the flip side, with Sims and SimCity and other games like that, I think it's just so far removed that it's past the point where it manages to catch the interest of people like myself. And I think that's sort of an interesting thing with sandbox games, how what sort of interest someone will have in them, how it varies so much from person to person, just what kind of sandbox games will be able to appeal to you, just sort of based on how far they are removed from a quote-unquote regular video game experience. Anyways, that's it for me. So, as always, thanks for taking my voicemail, and keep up the great work with the podcast.
Yeah, going back to our last episode on sandbox games, we were talking about open-world games and sandbox games, and Devros makes a pretty good point of it. Phase on Chaos makes a pretty good point of really, it depends on what kind of world you want to expose yourself to and what world you want to go live in.
Yeah.
That's really the cool part about open world games.
The thing for me, it's really interesting for me hearing why people enjoy the things they do. For me, definitely with Animal Crossing, for most media I consume, I go to it specifically hoping or like wondering what kind of way it'll make me feel, I guess. And maybe that's a bit irresponsible to like trust every piece of media I try to consume with like making me feel something or feel a certain way. But for Animal Crossing and like Persona 4, as I was saying earlier, like that game specifically just makes me feel like super at home and like easy and just super calm. And like, I guess that's why I go to that. And like, I get that too from a lot of other sandbox games where like, when you're free to just like create what you want out of this world you have or whatever, but Animal Crossing specifically, like just the character of everything in that game just makes me feel super fuzzy.
Well, I think we got some Fangamer news, not very much, but there is some. We have
and we dropped the biggest Fangamer news already.
And again, you can check out sweet33game.com if you'd like to play the Fangamer dating sim. We have a couple products in the store now, some new ones. I think we now have Blue Temple hoodies, which are pretty cool looking.
And I just played the Water Temple last night, and I'm not going to do that again for a few years.
We also have the Franklin pins and Tendo figurines. All those things are in the store. Tendo figurines, what are those, Heidi?
They're shaped like they're shaped like little game cartridges. And they have hands and feet, and they have a little, like, artwork on it, and some of it's cute, some of it's scary. And there are four gold cartridges, and they're all blind boxed, and so you don't know what you're getting. And we can't open them to check because they're in black bags inside the blind box, so you just get what you get, I'm sorry. And...
Dang.
This isn't Burger King.
Yeah, they're adorable. And also small keychains.
That's right, small keychains.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Tendo figurines also have the art on the Tendo figurines. Those are all done by different artists.
Yeah, different artists. I was looking that up, and it's really cute.
Yeah.
All right, our next podcast episode is, we don't exactly know yet.
Because it was supposed to be movie talk.
Right, and however, unfortunately, Eddie LeBron is... we're having scheduling conflicts. He's a pretty busy dude, so unfortunately we're going to have to push that back. Hopefully we'll be able to do it some other time. So we're going to figure something out by next week. So if you want to talk about, if you want to send us a message about anything, you can
we'll play it. Yeah. Ben, what is next week's episode going to be?
Why are you
putting it on me?
You've been gone. It's time to
It's my work. It's my what?
Ugh, you get to
I put
pick
so
it.
Much work into that segment, you guys.
You did. And it was great. Really, so that's why we're asking you.
Oh my god. Next week we're going to talk about
Next week is
dating
the space
Sims again.
Yeah. How about next week is the space boyfriend special?
Oh God, what is that?
Ooh,
mean?
I can sing my cover, Space Boyfriend.
Excuse me? Hadi will do that, and then Ben, I think it's time for a radio play.
Okay, maybe.
Next week, you very well may be hearing a radio play about Space Boyfriend.
But actually, probably not.
Probably not. Hopefully not.
So I guess we'll surprise everybody next week.
Including ourselves.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to go over?
Looks like we're probably going to be doing a game club there at the beginning of March. We'll have more details on the forum. But it looks like, let's see, we had a poll about it for N64 games, and looks like Yoshi's Story won.
Yoshi!
So, there you go. Better get your copy of Yoshi's Story on the N64, or however else you're going to play it.
Man, it's going to be real weird, you guys.
Let's get our Yoshi on.
Our Yoshi. I have a note to send this off on if you're ready to close this out.
Let's do it.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Fangamer Podcast. We'll see you next week. And always remember, you need to put your laifu in front of your waifu.
Happy Valentine's Day.